please rise.
John, will you lead us in the pledge to our flag?
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Thank you. You may be seated. Our clerk will now take the roll call.
Councilmember Wasson.
Present.
Councilmember Olson.
Here.
Councilmember Ingram.
Here.
Councilmember Muckler.
Here.
Councilmember Burst.
Here.
Councilmember Goodrich.
Here. Councilperson Hansen has requested an absence for tonight.
So no. Moved.
Okay, moved by Councilperson Ingram, seconded by Councilperson Olson, just because they were pretty simultaneously. We'll go with age before beauty.
That's fine.
So all in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
All opposed? Okay. He is excused. Next up is the public comment period. This is a period where anyone in the audience can come address the council on anything that's not on tonight's agenda. So everyone in the audience can speak other than the guy there in the booth. Anyone going once?
Bueller.
Bueller.
You don't count either. Yeah, Bueller. Okay. You can come forward then, sir. Welcome.
Thank you. I'm sure you don't know Papa John, living at 6072 Malloy. And I want to start off by letting you know that I have so many strokes of genius that my doctor has now put me on an aspirin regimen. And you'll see that tonight. Because one of my hints for you is that if you're going to eat frog legs, make sure they croak first. So that's one thought. And the other thing is here, I've got a newspaper article that apparently you guys are planning to start working on making me have a license for my pot that I carry with me everywhere I go. As it says right here, state outlines lotteries for pot licenses. And I object. I don't want to have to wear a license around my neck because I got a pot. So the next thing I have, because I see later on you do have poetry, I have to recite a poem from Shakespeare, okay?
The whole
song. I eat my peas with honey. I've done it all my life. It makes the peas taste funny, but it keeps them on my knife. Now, that's not William. That's Hector Shakespeare. You knew him, didn't you? And then I got another thing here to give to the mayor. I'm going to let him try to figure out what it is. Now, when you get this, there is four items in the bag. You have to take out all four, and then I'll see if you can figure out what it is you do with it.
Someday he's going to pull out something.
One of these times it's just going to blow up.
Stop looking.
Okay, in the bag is a...
Is there a timer?
A bottle of cheer.
Right.
Very colorful.
Right.
One can of 7-Up. Small can. Another can of 7-Up. A third can of 7-Up. Okay.
So that means you are to...
Three cheers.
What is he supposed to do, everybody?
Right.
Okay, Bueller. Bueller. Supposed to cheer up, for Pete's sake. And I can't afford three bottles of cheers, so you have to just pretend it's three cheers for you.
Okay.
Yeah, that's the best I can do.
I think I'll put this bag over my head. Thank you.
Yes, sir.
Anyone else like to top that? No. All right. Too bad for you. Okay, I'd like to close the regular council meeting at 6:03:52. And go into the Transportation Benefit District Board, of which you six members are the members, and you have before you a TBD consent agenda.
Really radical.
Councilperson Mutchler.
I move that we accept and approve the TBD consent agenda.
Second.
A second by Councilperson Watson. All in favor signify by saying aye.
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 All opposed? Motion carries 6-0. Okay, so that means at 6:04:27, I will go back to the regular council agenda. And now we have the regular consent agenda.
Move to approve the consent agenda.
Second.
Okay, moved and seconded by Councilperson Birch. All in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
All opposed? Motion carries 6-0. Okay. Moving on, this is National Poetry Month, and this is a mayor proclamation for April 2014. Whereas the Academy of American Poets establish the month of April as National Poetry Month in 1996, and whereas National Poetry Month seeks to illuminate the historical and contemporary legacy of American poets, to introduce Americans to the extraordinary pleasures of reading and writing and reciting poetry, to bring poets and poetry to the public in an immediate and innovative modalities, to make poetry valued and an integral part of children's education, and whereas poetry is recognized as an essential element for the arts and humanities that affects and honors the development of intellectual thought, cultural diversity, individual community enrichment, dignity, and pride, and whereas poetry has provided inspiration for extraordinary American artistic interpretation to the visual and performing arts, now therefore I, Gary S. Jensen, Mayor Ferndale, Washington, do hereby proclaim April 1st through April 30th, 2014 as Natural Poetry Month. I call upon all public officials, educators, librarians, businessmen, citizens of Ferndale, and even Papa John, Washington, to honor this month through participation in the celebratory programs, events, and activities offered for such purposes within our community, and to acknowledge poetry as an artistic foundation to build upon perpetuity and to sustain the greatness of our nation.
Amen.
So we also have a poem to read. This has been supplied by our own Arts Commission chairperson, Marla Morrow. She's in the back. Wave your hand. Yay. Or you both waved your hand. Okay. Well, Marla has a twin. They don't look alike. This poem is called Digging by Seamus Heaney, 1939 to 2013. This guy lived a long time. Wow. 2013. Okay. Between my finger and my thumb, the squat pen rests. Under my window, a clean, rasping sound. When the spade sinks into gravelly ground, my father, digging, I look down. Till his straining rump among the flower beds bends low, comes up 20 yards away, stooping in rhythm through potato drills where he was digging. The coarse boot nestled on the lug, the shaft against the inside knee was levered firmly. He rooted out tall tops, buried the bright edge deep, to scatter new potatoes that we picked, loving their cool hardness in our hands. By God, the old man could handle a spade, just like his old man. My grandfather cut more turf in a day than any other man on Toner's Bog. Once I carried him milk in a bottle, corked sloppily with paper. He straightened up to drink it, then fell to right away, nicking and slicing neatly, heaving sods over his shoulder, going down and down for the good turf, digging. The cold smell of potato mold, the squelch and slap of soggy peat, the curt cuts of the edge, through living roots awaken in my head. But I've no spade to follow men like them. Between my finger and thumb, the squat pen rests. I'll dig with it.
Very good.
Well, thank you. Yes? This lady is just running up here. Oh, okay. The second mayor proclamation is Poem in Your Pocket Day, which is? April 24th. Poem in Your Pocket Day. I'll check all your pockets on the 24th. Okay, next up is capital project updates.
I don't have a warrant.
I assume Katie's going to start that out.
I'll have to recite a poem, do I?
Only if you can.
I could.
I'll bring you one, Katie. You'll like it.
Project poetry is not very cute, though. So, hello, my name's Katie Ratter. I'm the project manager for Public Works. Giving you some project updates. We'll start with Cottage Place. If you remember, we undertook some work to replace the sewer on Cottage Place earlier this year. All that's remaining to be finished is the final lift, or the paving and then the striping. The weather's getting a little better. The asphalt plants are open, so we've got that tentatively scheduled, depending on the weather, for Wednesday of this week. That's all I have on that one. Next on the list is Barrett Road. Again, that's We received just under $400,000 through the Transportation Improvement Board for pavement preservation. Barrett Road's kind of fallen apart, and so we are working on finalizing a design and getting the bid documents ready so we can go to add late April. Basically, what we'll do is resurface that road, fix that up the pavement there.
Questions, Councilperson Goodrich?
I noticed on Barrett there's a lot of markings for you're going to cut out sections and then redo it. Is it going to be a patch or is it going to be a fix the little sections and a whole new layer on top?
We could approach it one of two ways. One method is to find the bad areas and dig those out, because usually when the asphalt falls apart, it means the subgrade's bad, so usually you can dig that out, add some gravel beneath, and then pave over the whole thing. We had the engineering firm go out there and take a look at that road, and it, like you said, there's quite a few areas where it's bad. So they might actually, they're looking at options to either pulverize the whole road, which means you mill up the asphalt, leave that as base, and then pave over top. We've kind of got a unique situation there on Barrett Road where there's no curb and gutter, so the elevation doesn't have to, you know, stick to the existing gutter line. So they might be able to pulverize and pave over the top versus doing these various dig-outs, and so the engineers are looking at that right now. That's not yet been determined. Any other questions? No? Okay. Church Road. So, utility work, the overhead lines, that's still underway. Black Rock and Comcast are done and out of there. Frontier's currently on site. They started work, I think, a couple weeks ago, and all their lines are on the west side of the road. And so they're working to string new wire on the east side on the new poles, and they're working to move all their facilities over. They're a couple of days ahead of schedule the last time I talked to them, so that's good. Cascade Gas is scheduled to start work on April 14th. I think I've said in the past that they've got about 1,000 feet of gas line that they need to replace, and so kind of brings me into the road closure, but we're going to allow them to close the road starting April 14th to get that work done. Basically, when they relocate or replace their gas main, it's going to destroy pretty much the southbound lane of Church Road. So we made the decision to close the road and allow them to do that work. And then I guess as far as utility work goes, PSE will be in after probably about the same time as Cascade Gas is finishing up, but after Frontier's done, to pull poles and get all the old poles out of the way. So I don't know if anybody has any questions about the utility work before I kind of talk about the contract work.
Okay. Appears to be none.
Okay. So as far as our contract work goes, we called for bids. That bid opening occurred Wednesday the 26th. As you know, the authorization to award is under consideration tonight. I think that's item F. And we're working towards a May 5th start date. As I mentioned earlier, the road closure, we started our PR work for that. We mailed out informational cards to folks that either live on Church Road or live on a street that dumps into Church Road or other people that we think might use Church Road on a regular basis. So I've got extra copies of cards if anybody in the audience is interested in seeing those. I'll pass these out if you guys are interested. Those went out on the 28th. That was last Friday. Sam helped us out by issuing a press release on Monday, basically letting all the media that the road closure is coming up on the 14th. You've probably noticed if you've driven down Main Street or if you frequent Church Road that we've installed signs. The sign here at Main Street, just the east of the bridge, when you're coming into town, basically is dual purpose. It says, you know, be prepared for the road to be closed on the 14th. Use the detour. Once the 14th comes, that orange portion of the sign that says starting April 14th will be removed, And so that will stay there for the duration of the closure. The two informational signs that we already had on Church Road, we basically put a diamond orange signs on to let people know that the road would be closed on the 14th, just to try to, you know, get more awareness of this because it's going to impact folks. We've also notified and coordinated with the various emergency services, the police department, Fire District 7. Ferndale School District knows that we're closing the road starting the 14th. For the first portion of the closure, Cascade Gas is they're going to be working around the school buses. So for the first, I guess that's a 2.5 weeks, between the 14th and the 5th, the school buses will be able to do their normal routes. Once our contractor gets on site, then we'll have to make some adjustments. But the school district's been really great about working with the city to come up with solutions for that. WTA has been notified that the road's going to be closed, and they're going to be adjusting their routes. I haven't heard back exactly what those are, but they're going to shift that route to the east, and I think it involves Shannon, and then they'll come out on either, I think, South Bakerview Park. Maybe North Bakerview Park, hit Church Road, and then continue around on Thornton. So they're adjusting their routes, so they should be putting notices up fairly shortly. Sanitary Service is aware that we're closing the road, and they're fine with dealing with that. So I'm hoping that they send notification out to their customers so they're aware. We've also made contact with the post office to let them know that the road's going to be closed. That's about all I have for Church Road.
Questions on Church?
Very thorough.
Appears to be none.
Okay. I think Janice wanted to report on the water softening project.
Okay. On that one there, we're advertising for bids right now. We were planning on opening bids on the 9th of this month, but we're going to allow the contractors just one more day. They were asking for a little bit more time, so we just gave them one day. So we officially open on April 10th. And then we'll be bringing that to City Council at the bid award to the City Council next City Council meeting, mm-hmm. which is the 21st.
So. We'll open up the 10th?
Yes. Yeah, there's a lot of different projects out for bid right now, so we were just kind of asking for one more day, so we went ahead and made that adjustment.
Any questions on that? Can't come soon enough. Okay, any other projects? I have the library storm pipe bid and then the city facilities future study session.
Yeah, to maybe just start off with the library project itself. If you've seen around City Hall, they're now tackling the parking lots. Obviously, now that we're back into the ground again for the parking lots, we're finding more and more unsuitable soils, a lot of concrete. So that's all being hauled out. The dirt work is putting more pressures on the library budget. We're about halfway done, but it's getting to be fairly tight. So we're talking about maybe scaling back a little bit of the landscaping, maybe just putting in some of the more foundational work, and then working with the library group over time to finish that up. But we're going to continue to plug along here and watch the costs and see what how far the budget can stretch, and we'll be talking to you all more about that. As far as the storm pipe itself, this is a somewhat related project insofar as we didn't want to redo the parking lot only to have that large storm pipe fail and have to go in and dig it all out again. So we decided to go ahead and do this work now. We worked with a contractor favor to try to see if we could get them to do it. We weren't able to come to terms on it, so we're actually are going out to bid, and I'll actually let Janice talk a little bit more about that.
We open on the 9th?
We open on the 9th.
So we're currently scheduled to open bids on the 9th, and because this work here, we want to get this underway just as quickly as possible. We're asking City Council to give staff, bid pre-authorization. And so what we're asking for is 10% over the engineer's estimate, so that would be $160,000. That includes the pipe and the wall. The wall cost was included in the library contract, so then that would be decreased, or that would be deleted from that contract, and then the funding would go towards this. So it's not just the pipe, it's the pipe and the wall. And then, so it, once, if the open bid's then on Wednesday and we exceed the 160, what that means is that we bring it, then we have to bring it back to council. But if we, if council gives us the pre-authorization, what we can do is after we open bids and we review the bid documents, everything's in order, then we can just, we can turn around and send out the bid documents to the contractor. We're hoping to have the contractor on site April 21st. And, you know, the earlier we can get that work underway, the better and the less impact to favor.
Councilperson Ingram?
I would move that we allow the Public Works Department to be pre-authorized up to $160,000.
Second.
Moved and seconded by Councilperson Watson. Question first by Councilperson Goodrich.
My question is for our finance director. Isn't that a higher dollar amount than what we originally talked about for this? And
we put in $125,000.
For the pipe.
For the pipe. Apparently we're going to do the wall in there as well.
Right. We had not included the pipe cost in with the pipe. The wall cost in with the pipe, yeah.
So do we have the money to pay that additional $40,000?
Depends on which option you choose when we get to item I.
Yeah, the cash is in the storm fund. It's just a question of, as Mark mentioned, what we want to do as far as more long-term financing. If, depending on how we go tonight, we'll either be financing some of our future capital projects with cash as we can afford it, or doing some strategic debt obligations. But right now, the cash exists in the storm fund.
Okay, I just was concerned because it was $40,000 more than what we originally kind of talked about and agreed, you know, looked at.
Is 40 the estimate of the wall?
Around 30,000. 30,000 is that. 160 is for the wall. So that part. And then I think I was estimating for the pipe to be 125.
Yeah. But in the budget, in the hearings, we only talked about the 125. We never talked about the wall.
Right, but the wall would be covered with the library project. So those, the funds that were set aside for the library.
So two separate funding sources?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Oh, okay.
Storm and the library.
Because the wall was part of the library project.
Right. And then, so there, that funding is already included in that budget. So the way we did the project, we included the wall and the pipe. So that's why.
Okay. So I have a motion and a second. Further discussion? Any more questions? Seeing none, all in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. All opposed? Motion carries 6-0. And then the other one is the Capital Facilities Future Study Session. Committee members from that committee want to discuss that?
I was wondering if we could have a discussion about whether or not to take on some debt to fix our buildings. Right now the interest rates are fairly low, and it's looking like interest rates are going to continue to rise. We have a lot of stuff that we need to do. This building needs to be done. We need to do some work on City Hall. We have the community center that we're going to use, the Pioneer Pavilion right now. That needs work. We have to figure out what we're going to do with the pizza annex. And I'd like to just have staff kind of figure out what would it cost to bring all our buildings up to snuff so it doesn't look like it looks. And also just so they can last another 10 or 15 years. So I was hoping we just have a discussion, because right now we don't really have any numbers, you know. How much would all this cost? And then we can sit down, should we borrow money, or should we just do some other things? I don't know. But I'd like to have the discussion.
So direct staff, and then we'd have a 5 to 6 before council study session?
That's correct.
Yeah, that should probably do it.
There's
no big rush on this.
Yeah, there's no big rush.
Yeah. So I think we're talking about, on the one hand, maintenance, roofs, siding, you know, just things that will need to be done. And on the other hand, aesthetics, what might be nice, the pizza annex, for example. There's sort of just two levels of things here.
And the community, turning the community center, there's going to be some work that has to be done when the library pulls out of there, because a lot of that stuff was put in for the library. So we'll have to figure out what would that really cost us to turn it into a community center.
Sure.
As well. I figure once we have real numbers, then we can have a better discussion. But again, April is a crazy month for public works, so let's just, if we could, you know, maybe early June so we can have a discussion, because I know April, May is just not a good time for them.
So we don't need a vote, but great idea, yep. You know, hour of your time. We know your time is great, but June, kind of a nodding of heads, yeah. To go
June-ish,
forward.
Maybe yeah. June, July. Whenever staff is ready, let's put it that way.
Okay.
I'd rather leave it to you.
Just going into our construction season.
Well, we don't need, like, exact numbers, but look, I mean, it looks like, I don't know about the roof on City Hall. It's covered with moss. I don't know. Does it need a new roof? What would the pizza annex cost if we knocked it down?
Between all of staff, we could come up with some fairly good estimates for discussion.
Because, I mean, is it, do we need just $100,000 to make everything all beautiful, or are we talking $500,000?
Or if we did it like with the kitchen.
Yeah.
In the, you know, thing.
Yeah.
Councilperson Ingram?
One thing that we discussed kind of among the committees informally, I think after we adjourned it, really, and Sam could probably address this with his expertise, is it possible that when we get all done with the refurbishing of Pioneer Pavilion, could City Council meet there? Could we turn that into a council chamber?
Yeah.
Because that would totally, we'd have all kinds of options on the plate then for this building.
It's certainly a big enough space. I mean, it has bathrooms. And
it's a question of acoustics, probably. That'd probably be our biggest thing. They probably will be more improved than this place.
So.
Yeah.
So, but I mean, it's just something we can look at.
But honestly, raising the roof here so that the projector's on your eyes and getting a better sound system would immensely improve this room.
Mm-hmm. So. How far up can you go?
It's empty.
Above us is, what, it's a 5 foot?
5 to 7 feet above that.
It's not seven. So I can't stand up completely. I bend over a little bit. I'm 5'10".
I'm curious, too, for the lifespan.
It should be something to be looked at both options.
Yeah.
And what's the lifespan of these buildings, too?
Great. I mean, it'll take us a good hour, and we'll have some good. So staff will tackle that on. So I'm kind of seeing a nodding go-forward schedule when staff's ready.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Good.
Very broad numbers. Don't overthink it, because I...
Okay, and then that's it on capital facility updates. Okay, moving on to the public hearing on Ferndale Village Homes. Our planning director will...
The village...
Oh, Haley's going to take care. Okay, welcome, Haley. Councilperson Mutchler.
Yeah, I just want council to know I'm going to recuse myself from this agenda item from discussion and voting.
Does he have to leave?
He should.
Yeah.
Oh, okay.
Does he have to step out?
Yeah.
Give
you the stink eye.
Okay. As if.
Whatever.
That's a theory. Get to Freeberg's key and then rummage through his truck.
Sure. He'll be at Woods.
Well, this is the...
Would you like the screen down? It's
Freeberg's.
What's it worth to you?
Yeah, what's it worth to you?
Thank you for your assistance.
Stop moving it.
Haley, it is your floor.
Oh, thank you. Okay, so my name is Haley Miller. I'm the assistant planner here. And today we will be discussing the Ferndale Village Homes application. And this is a closed record hearing, and council is tasked today with making a quasi-judicial decision. And last month we presented this topic to you during council committee, which means that the decision is to be based on the record that is already prepared by the hearing examiner, which includes the public hearing that happened during that meeting and the staff report and recommendations. So just a brief overview of the process. The applicant has met all the procedural requirements for this application. Staff conducted a TRC meeting initially with the applicant, and they brought back the recommendations from staff and submitted a preliminary plat application. And with that, various departments reviewed that application and prepared a staff report and presented it at the hearing examiner meeting on March 13th. And the public was in attendance and was able to express their comments and concerns, and the city staff and applicant were able to address those comments during that time. And with that hearing, the hearing examiner recommended approval and agreed with staff, who also recommended approval based on comments from the hearing and the conditions set forth throughout the staff report. So as you can see up there, this is a 10-lot plan unit development. and the applicant is requesting approval of this application as well as a variance. Is there a pointer on this thing? Right there. Variance to reduce the front setbacks from 20 feet to 10 feet on all the lots in the development that are abutting Thornton and Malloy Avenue. And just a few things about this development. The applicant will be dedicating a trail that goes along the northwest to the east and down to the south of the project, and that will be enough to cover the traffic mitigation fees for the project. What else? The applicant also proposes a traffic dedication down here, which will be used for a future right-of-way or a future roundabout that is in our traffic comprehensive plan. And stormwater will be treated on-site right here. So they just request approval of this project. Let's see if I'm forgetting anything. Oh, at council committee last week, there was concerns raised over the frontage improvements. And I'm not sure if we fully addressed what was being proposed by Public Works Department. So Janice will be here to maybe answer questions if you guys have any additional questions on that. And also, parking was brought up during council committee meeting last week. There were some concerns raised since there's limited on-street parking, as with other normal developments for this one, since it's on the corner. So staff will be looking into ways to address this through the CCNRs and place conditions to where parking will not be allowed on Thornton or Malloy or in the way of the shared access, as you can see right there.
Okay, Council, this is a public hearing, so technical questions, not saying how you're going to vote or opinion, because it is a public hearing. So technical questions, I see the first stand up was Councilperson Goodrich, and then Councilperson Birch, and then Councilperson Ingram. So we'll start with Councilperson Goodrich.
At the committee, there was the concern over street parking on Malloy and Thornton, and there was going to be some discussion or something about that. A curb or something that would deter between the sidewalk and the street to keep people from parking,
right?
And like they currently are now. And was there any follow up or something discussion with that?
I don't know if that's what we're planning for frontage improvements. If you want to talk about that, Janice, we were proposing, if that's not the case, to put no parking signs up there and enforce it.
And on this, once we receive the civil drawings, is that something that we can take a look at? As far as the curb, we'll have to look at the location, how we would transition, and if there would be maybe some drainage impacts. So we really need to take a look at that once we get the civil drawings and start reviewing.
Did that answer your question sufficiently?
Well, I mean, it's a concern of mine, and it was kind of a concern at the committee meeting, that we don't want to get into a situation where visitors or whatever are just pulling up and parking on the kind of the little paved sidewalk or something that's there. And because there is no other real parking there, so if you have somebody that's having a birthday party or whatever, where are all the cars going to park and things and not affect the streets?
Response, sir?
Do
you
have a comment to add?
What we were looking at is within this subdivision, there are the required two off-street parking spaces. So the applicant would be providing sufficient parking to meet our standards. The concern that we heard from council was exactly as you said, what about something unusual, or what about the possibility of these residents or their guests deciding to park wherever it's convenient. As Haley said, this is a little bit of a different circumstance where they are not given the same opportunity to park along the street as many other subdivisions. but the on-street parking is not necessarily for the subdivision. It's just reflecting our development standards. So what we'd be looking at more is whatever device we ultimately use, whether it's a curb or, obstructions, is that it's enforcement as much as anything else. You know, if someone chooses to park or to jump the curb or whatever, it's about enforcing it to make sure that they are notified of their infraction and either have to pay the penalty or move. But that it's not necessarily requiring that these applicants provide more parking than any other subdivision. Okay.
I don't mean that they have to provide parking. I'm just more concerned that they don't park on Thornton and Malloy or on top of the sidewalk, as some of the cases in some areas that people do. They think the sidewalk is now a paved parking lot for them.
I would venture or suggest that council's direction is pretty clear that there shall be no parking in this area on those streets. The precise mechanism for that to take place really would need to be as part of the civil reviews, where it would need to weigh the costs and benefits and the negatives and advantages of the different things. But it would be appropriate for the council to place as a condition there shall be absolutely no parking along these streets at the frontage.
Councilperson Birch, and then Ingram, and then Olson.
My concern was the parking and the curbs as well. I would suggest the step-down curbs, not the sloping curb that leads into the sidewalk, because these people will have visitors, and the visitors are going to ignore the signs, typically.
Councilperson Ingram?
If I remember correctly, I was just kind of sitting in the audience at that committee meeting. There was a mention made that they were going to do partial frontal improvements. They were not going to do curbs, gutters, and sidewalks all the way to the actual corner because of the future roundabout that's probably 20 years down the road, and I think that's ridiculous. They should put curbs, gutters, and sidewalks all the way around the corner. If we have to tear it out 10 years from now, too bad, but at least somebody's got a place to walk.
So, response from Public Works?
Along Malloy, the city, we received a federal grant to install that concrete path. And so what we're trying to do with this project is to retain that path. Since we had received the grant funds, if we tear out the path, then we're going to have to, or that pathway, we would have to pay back some of the grant funds. And so what we're trying to do is just incorporate that path in with the street frontage improvements, which would be on there, probably on Malloy. Since there's so many utility cuts there, we would probably have them probably dig out some of the areas and then overlay that, and then just incorporate that existing pathway in with the design and not do the full curb, gutter, and sidewalk, because we just put that in.
Is everyone following that? I'm getting this.
No.
Can you explain that a little bit better?
Okay.
If you put a sidewalk instead of a path, I don't understand.
Okay. On this section of Malloy, I don't know if we can bring an aerial photo up, but anyway, probably 2 years ago, we installed a concrete walkway that's adjacent to the roadway. And that one there, we received the federal grant. So what we're trying to do with this project is just retain that existing concrete pathway in with some just additional street improvements.
So the sidewalk that's there,
yeah,
that we did when we did the Homolai sidewalk, that sidewalk stays.
Yes.
That's what you're saying.
Right.
That's on the other side.
No, it's on that side. Right. And so we just installed that.
Yeah. And the question is a technical question from the council, I think, that both Councilperson Goodrich and Birch and Councilor Ingram is asking is, isn't now that cement sidewalk at ground level with no curb or anything?
Correct, but there is a grassy planter strip that's in between the traveled way and the concrete path.
But you could, as a car, you could pull up and park, and your wheels would be on that sidewalk.
Yes. It depends on, I'm saying yes, but it depends on what's in between them, too. Because it kind of varies. There's like a grassy strip and how that dips and how that was graded, because we did have to maintain the existing drainage along Malloy. So it does kind of vary up and down that street.
Okay. Any further clarification on that question before I move on to other questions?
No.
Okay. Councilperson Ingram, did you get your question answered, or
well,
so I'm probably hearing some no opinions.
No, but I don't quite understand. That project has been done for well over a year, and it's asphalt. It's not concrete.
No, it's a concrete path. Concrete.
Mm-hmm. Sure looks like asphalt when I drive up Malloy.
Maybe where it was existing, maybe where we tied into it. Yeah, but the
so concrete in front of this though.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Okay.
Right, and then
but I don't understand why we can't incorporate that into our regular curb gutters and sidewalk along that section of the road.
Just, it would be very difficult to do that because it would be a retrofit. Probably by the time you went through all that process trying to retrofit that, it'd probably be cheaper to rip it out and start all over the way that it was built. And you know,
well, it just bothers me that we're going to allow a development to go through here without meeting the same standards that every other developer in the city has to meet as far as frontage improvements when they do a development. That bothers me. I mean,
I'll have staff respond to that. Planning director?
One of the things for council to remember is the city, it would be illegal for the city, and the city in the past has ignored the law by requiring frontage improvements beyond the proportionate impact of the development. Not saying that this is or is not the case here, but the city cannot require that any development do more than offset its own impacts, and cannot in any case require that a development fix an existing deficiency. That is absolutely illegal under state law.
So you're saying in the past we have received a legal interpretation that's different than what council has interpreted in the past?
That state law court cases have clarified that cities similar to Ferndale, and in some cases Ferndale, have required frontage improvements beyond what they could legally require, including maybe some of the more recent plats, you know, 10 or 15 years ago.
Okay, city administrator.
So is the issue there's already a sidewalk?
Yes, and that goes, I mean, you know, on some of these we don't know when development's going to occur. So we got the grant funds to put the path in there. You know, people maybe could use that 10 years before any development occurred. At least they had a place to walk. So here we made that call to go
so
ahead and put the path
in. So what you're saying is, let me read this back to what you just said. So a city decides to get a grant that's not enough money for a completely standard sidewalk, curb, gutter, sidewalk, and they put in an asphalt pathway.
It's a concrete path.
Okay, an asphalt or a concrete path.
Concrete,
I'm
buddy.
I'm thinking of, say, Ferndale Terrace. And then a developer comes along and says, you've already put in a substandard sidewalk, so that means I don't have to put in a standard sidewalk because the city has already put in a substandard sidewalk. Is that what you're saying? Just interesting. I'm
no, there's more to it than that.
There's more to it than that, where you have to look at the nexus and proportionality.
Okay.
Can we say we want curb and gutter, and if the developer wants to try to save the existing sidewalk, good on them, and if they can't, good on them?
But the thing is that Malloy is not on our six-year TIF, and we do not have a design for it. And so whatever we put in there is probably just a throwaway. And that's what we knew that the path, the concrete path, If it's going to be there for 5 to 10 years, then that was better than what we have there now, because otherwise people didn't have any place to walk at all. And so, you know, all these things are taken into consideration when we're looking at this. And there, if they have a number of utility cuts to make to that to the street, so that there they should have to do an overlay. And then when they're doing an overlay, then you look at, okay, has the asphalt failed in a number of different locations? Then you should fix that at the same time. Otherwise, your overlay is not going to hold up for very long. So here, you know, it's like we already have that path. It's not very old, and it just made sense to look at hanging on to that and making that part of the frontage improvements.
Now, that's on Malloy.
Mm-hmm.
What's happening on Thornton?
Yeah, so Thornton, that there, we have a project on our six-year TIF, but right now it's low volume, dead end. The pavement's not the greatest, but it's not bad. And so that there we were looking at, there's still going to be some utility cuts to connect to sewer. So we're looking at just an overlay and then an adding a path just along that south side. So then basically, you have the loop that goes all the way around. And it ties all that in. At least it provides a walking path for that development and adjacent property owners. So that was the kind of the thought process
you're
there.
You're going to put a path on the south side?
No, on the, sorry.
On the north side.
Yes, north side of the, south side of the property.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
Right.
Councilperson Olson and then Watson.
The more we talk, the more questions I got. So this grant, how long, once you get the grant, we can't tear it up for how long?
Five to 7 years, something like that. Maybe longer. I'd have to look into that specific grant. But usually...
That'd be good. Now this cut from Thornton over to Malloy, are we going to use the existing sidewalk that's in there?
The cut from Thornton?
Yeah, it goes... It kitty corners behind a utility pole, I believe.
At the intersection?
Yes. On the northeast corner.
Okay.
Is that going to be done away with when... Looks like it's done away with because of this possibility of a roundabout in 3 decades.
I'm still not. So are you talking? Are you talking utility pole?
Why don't you just point at it?
Right there.
Okay, so that utility pole probably will stay there unless there is some reason to relocate it as part of the development.
Right behind that is where there's concrete of this sidewalk.
Mm, okay.
That connects at an angle like this. The pole's right here.
Mm.
This appears to change that whole corner of that intersection. No?
Yeah, but there would be, there's no need to change that right now. Because there's no intersection improvements planned, as far as I know, at this time.
Okay, so that's just going to be left alone. It's just going to be barren, a hunk of land, I guess.
Yeah, probably maybe a little bit of landscaping, just some shrubs.
Right.
No trees. But
it's just being dedicated to us now, so that in the future we don't have to go buy it from.
Okay, so there's nothing can be built.
Right, correct. Because so that way, at a later date, the city doesn't have to for intersection improvements buy a house or something.
And there is no sidewalk down this side on Thornton.
Correct.
So that could have stepped down. Gutters and sidewalks and what have you?
That there, I was just looking at the same type of path that we have along Malloy. Because, I mean, the same thing. We
then
have
getting a break from doing what other people are required to do.
But that there, we have Thornton Road on our six-year tip. So we are planning, we have a planned project there. And so the way I'm looking at that is it'll be torn out and replaced.
When?
Who knows? I mean, it could be.
Exactly.
Yeah, but it could be 5, 10 years or less? Who knows? Depends on when we get funding.
Just like Paul said, it seems like they're getting a break for all these things that other people are required to do. And as far as what Yori's saying, is we can't go beyond the scope of that. We're not asking for that. We're asking for sidewalks, curbs, and gutters along the section that they're going to be using.
Okay.
Nothing past the borders of that. That section that they're using.
So, clerk wants to explain. You're getting beyond technical questions. Well,
this is a technical question. We're trying to figure out how this thing's going to be built. How are you not saying that is?
You're weaving into your questions many statements about what you believe needs to be happening already prior to the public having their say in front of you.
That's because we keep getting two different stories. Of what's going to be stuck in there.
We're trying
to figure out which one is going to be. What is the technical description of what's going to be built there?
And they're all great questions. I think it might be more appropriate to just have a public hearing real quick, and then we keep questioning staff about what's happening.
I don't care if you want to do it now.
That was okay.
I don't
want
to
hold. No, they're great questions. I'm not saying those are bad.
It really isn't. I actually have a technical question.
Okay, there you go. Councilperson Watson.
Are you sure?
I've thought about this for like 20 minutes now. So I want to understand that they were given a variance by the hearing examiner. So council can't change that variance, right? The hearing examiner has said They have a variance. I really want to make sure I understand the quasi-judicial. So what is brought forward to us is the hearing examiner has said they can have a variance, therefore they can have a variance. Is that correct?
That is correct, that you may now approve the hearing examiner's recommendation. He has found that legally they meet the requirements for a variance. You could still decide that you see different things in the record or different clarification things where you disagree with the hearing examiner, and you can either deny it, you can seek to maybe slightly, you know, expand on some of the conditions, where then that's a little bit of a judgment call, you know, which conditions will require a new hearing or which will not. Or if you choose to expand your consideration beyond what was legitimately in the hearing, then you would remand it back to the hearing examiner for a new hearing to integrate that information into the record.
I want to make sure that, I mean, it's not counsel that's going to be deciding it. If we don't like it for some reason, we would send it back to the hearing examiner. I mean, counsel's not going to be making the decision about where to put the sidewalks.
You should be very clear what it is that you are would be asking the hearing examiner and staff and the applicant to
resolve. That's my question,
too.
I mean, you can't.
Okay. I think we're going to go to the public hearing part because I think the discussion is not over, but we'll get the public hearing. So at 6:51:18. Okay, a public hearing is a formal opportunity to give testimony to the council for consideration in their decision-making process. Written comments may also be submitted to the city clerk prior to beginning of the hearing. When the mayor calls your name, proceed as follows. Audience members who have signed up prior to the beginning of our meeting will be called first to speak at the public hearing. If you're unable to sign up for the meeting, you'll be given an opportunity to address the council once we've gotten through all the speakers listed on the hearing sheets. Each speaker should state his or her name, address for the record, and be given 3 minutes to address the council. When a large group of individuals supports the same position on issue, we encourage the selection of one or two representatives to speak on behalf of the group. So we have anyone signed up to speak? Okay, so anyone from the audience would like to come speak or represent this issue? Have some courage. Sounds to me like they have some questions they'd like to ask.
Don't be afraid.
Can he come forward and speak?
He is a proponent, and he spoke at the initial hearing. He cannot introduce new information, but he can clarify information that was submitted already on the record. And I think...
Let me clarify that. There's nothing precluding him from doing anything he wants at the microphone. The council cannot consider new information.
That is accurate.
But they could ask him questions. Knowing that they all read the packet material, they just have to make sure that they're focused on the packet material, not any new information.
Okay.
Questions are completely appropriate.
And only if this speaker wishes to come forward. It's voluntary.
And ultimately, while there are these restrictions because it's quasi-judicial or a closed record hearing, we will caution you if we feel that you're getting close to the edge. But the purpose is for you to be able to go through and be able to make your decision. It's also to protect the applicant from things coming out of left field. So you are allowed to ask questions. You are allowed to do your business.
Okay. So anyone in the audience like to come forward and speak on this subject?
But you don't have to if you don't want to.
Would you like to say anything about your project? Would anyone in the audience like to come forward?
Apparently not.
Going once.
Come on.
Welcome, sir.
Welcome.
And who are you?
Hi, my name is J.P. Slegel with Freeland Associates Engineering. We're the project engineer for the project. Basically, I just want to see if there's any questions that I can answer directly.
Very good.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor.
Any questions for this guest, counsel?
I mean, I'm not allowed to take into account anything in my decision.
You can ask a question of him.
Oh, I could just make him talk and then ignore it?
Well, you can ask a question. I don't know.
Okay, I'm just curious, why did you request the variance?
We requested the variance because the initial design had driveways along the frontage of both Thornton and Malloy. And with discussing with both staff, Planning and Public Works, we decided that it would be safer design to put the driveways behind that the thing. So basically, your frontage would look at just homes. And the second portion of that was we want to push it towards the street because as these streets become busier, Thornton is a collector and Malloy will be an arterial. Mm-hmm. That we wanted to make the yards very basically unusable for. You don't want a kid rolling a ball all of a sudden out into an arterial. So we figured by pushing the houses towards the front, we'd not only create a nicer streetscape by having the vehicles parked in the back, you'd also create a safer development by keeping the kids, volleyball courts, anything they want to do in the backyard, in the recreation, in their backyards, in the open space area. So it's mostly safety consideration.
One more?
Yes.
Do you have CCRs and other developments that you've had, and have you found those CCRs to be effective or enforceable?
I actually don't really write the CCNRs. We normally hire a lawyer to do that. It's kind of outside the
scope. Our developer wrote ours or hired some. I'm just curious.
To tell you the truth, after we're done designing, we're usually on to the next project. We're not involved in enforcement, so I can't really speak to that.
Well, maybe Rory can speak.
And then from staff?
The same law firm that wrote yours wrote theirs.
Okay.
Counsel, any...
Bummer for you.
Counsel, any of your earlier questions you'd like to ask this guest? Councilperson Goodrich?
I was curious, after the committee meeting, did any staff come and talk to you about the issue that was brought up at the committee meeting in regards to the sidewalks and curbs and gutters and off-street parking?
The email, I spoke to yours briefly about
that. So you're aware of the council's concerns over the idea of parking on the streets on Thornton and Malloy?
Yeah, I share your concern. You don't want a car parked on the side of the street on an arterial. It doesn't make any sense. It's not safe. At the same time, you don't want a car on any subdivision or any street to park on the sidewalk. It's not acceptable anywhere. No parking signs, and it is a busy street. That should be easily enforced by, police, other neighbors seeing cars parked on the sidewalk, blocking pedestrians. It shouldn't be typical anywhere.
Response from staff, or you look like you want to respond?
He always looks like that.
I just always look like I agree with the applicant. Yeah. No, I didn't have any response.
Also, any other questions?
Not for him.
Okay. No more questions? Okay, thank you for attending. Anyone else would like to speak?
Thank you.
Thank you. Sir. Appreciate it.
Welcome, sir.
I'm John Friedberg. I'm the developer of this project. The idea of this project was to make some room for the kids to play, have a little area in the back, instead of having individual lots where they wouldn't have any room to play, but they kind of make an area where they can enjoy the afternoon. These families that are buying this are all young families. They all got young kids. As far as the curb and the sidewalk and all that kind of stuff, not because I'm trying to save money or anything like that, but I don't see any point in it. It's hard to make some things work sometimes, but keep everybody happy. But, it'd be like the school project up there. I remember when they built the Skyline School up there, they put curb and gutter in. But it was all not the road or any grade of any kind. But so that kind of stuff went by the wayside later on. But the idea was this whole thing was, there's probably a way we can make some parking for, people in the back that may come visit, like you say, a birthday party or something like that. That's not out of line, but the play area is getting kind of small. We lost some in that retention pond that we tried to make the one just below us work, but that went by the wayside, and that would have made some room for those kids. That was our main concern. But the idea was not to have the cars backing out on those streets. That's why we changed our plan to put them on the inside, on the on the back side of the houses, what I would say would be on the east side and on the north, so that people do not back out into a street. And that's probably the biggest hazard there is in any kind of a city, any kind of town, or any kind of street when you back out. Not so much on subdivisions, but you get a thoroughfare like this. It's a different program. I mean, it's very dangerous, and so that's why we changed the plan. But we're willing to build a little trail or a sidewalk for on the inside so people can walk around and things like that, enjoy the area. But we only got so much room, and that's, you know, we can't, you know. The idea, I think, would be nice to have slow down on that Malloy Road. You know, traffic could slow down, and Thornton Road, I don't know when that will go through, and you guys probably don't either, but it might, and it might not. I don't know, but who knows. But anyway, but that was the idea was the whole thing was for the kids to have a little play area, soccer field, or maybe a little tennis court, or, you know, volleyball court, something like this where, you know, they don't have to go downtown or they don't have to go across the county to do this kind of stuff and make it kind of easy for them and kind of like community-like.
Okay, questions for this guest? Councilperson Ingram?
Thank you. John, you brought this proposal to us originally about 2 years ago, and I think we gave you a thumbs up on it at that time. I think the idea of shrinking, if you will, the front yard for safety of the kids is a great idea. I don't have a problem with that. But I think we're inviting disaster somewhere down the road if we don't put up some kind of curbing. Doesn't have to be curved gutters and sidewalks, but you've got to have a barrier between the crazy drivers on Malloy and Thornton and the people walking down that path. So even if we don't go with full gutters and curves, we got to have something there. We got to have a barrier. Keep the cars out of there because they will go up on that sidewalk and there will be people parking on that whatever yard there is in front of those houses. I guarantee they will. They do it in our neighborhood. And it's just, we just got a kid something up there, because if there's kids walking out there going to school, it's just without some kind of safety barrier between that traffic lane and that paved path, it's just going to be looking for somebody to get hurt.
Well, that's why we decide on a trail around the back side. That sidewalk could be closed off if you really want to get technical about it, if you want to force them around. You could force some the kids to go to around the outside of it, which would. What are you doing now? I mean, is you got the same hazard now? And I don't know if anyone's thinking.
You don't have 10 self help homes sitting right there in the 10 feet from the road either. you're changing the dynamics here, and if you're going to change the dynamics, you got to take some consideration for not just the kids. But anybody that's going to be walking along that.
What's the street down here by the, is it 2nd Street, where they built those 3 or 4 units in there?
I'm going to go for clarification in terms of, can you clarify the difference between his previous development and a self-help home development? Can you clarify that?
Well, the self-help home developments that went in up by us on Upper Thornton, full curbs, gutters, and sidewalks everywhere.
But what is the difference in terms of that usage?
Nothing. The kids everywhere look like a pack of rats out there.
They're generally younger families.
Yeah, they're usually younger families with younger kids.
Okay.
And so is this place. This development's going to be the same thing. Younger families, younger kids. And I know you're doing a great idea with putting play areas in the back and trying to keep the kids out of the front yard. I love that idea. It's a great idea. I think that idea needs to be done more often. But I'm just concerned that there's no type of even just a physical bump barrier between that front sidewalk area, path area, whatever you want to call it, and the traffic going by. It's a concern to me.
Do you think a curb would make any difference?
Absolutely. Sure. Just a simple curb down
just
that.
Just so a car can't.
Just so a car just can't zip right across there and
park on the sidewalk. Well, just your fear is that someone is going to park using part of the sidewalk, and then now you've
you've made it unsafe because there's a car inside.
I can pretty much guarantee you that they'll be doing that if they can.
Okay. Gotcha. Okay. Thank you.
Yeah.
Anyone else from the audience like to speak on the subject? Staff?
I was just going to, from the tenor of the discussion, it sounds like what council may wish is to direct the public works staff to ensure that there's some sort of barrier, without calling out exactly what it might be, some sort of physical barrier between either the existing concrete sidewalk or the new concrete sidewalk, Molloy and Thornton, and the travel lane. So it would physically bar someone from just pulling over off on the shoulder.
My fear factor is the same from committee, is that if you show that picture, and I know we have development standards, Jory, but we have to look at what the history is. Is, you are correct, is it changes with a self-help home. And the only way we can look in this test of that is the self-help home developments we have. This development is at a disadvantage because they don't have any on-street parking. And so if we got all in our cars and we drove up and we looked at the self-help home development that is off Thornton right now, or we got in our cars and we drove up Portaway and we drove into Portaway Commons, we would see a lot of cars. Overflowings, what appears to me is they have two parking spots for every house, and I don't, maybe you can explain it to me different on that picture, it doesn't appear there's any parking on the pathway into development. So two cars per house, and that's it. Now, so if we did my little tour and looked at those two developments, you're going to see way more cars than two houses of development because they have the street for overflow, and they're using the street. That's okay with me. But here, we don't have that, and so as that young family grows up, and they have that, two or three bedrooms per house?
Three, yeah.
Okay, so three bedrooms. So mom and dad now two, and little Johnny and Sue grow up, and they each have a car, and then their friends have a car. I don't know. Tell me where they're going to park in this development, because we have eliminated the street parking there. I mean, it's a legitimate question to ask that I haven't heard an answer for.
You know, there is no good answer that I can provide you to tell you that there will be sufficient parking in this or any other individual subdivision. Just because people are going to tend to do what they can do until it is more disadvantageous to them to do it than not do it. So in other words, what I'm saying is, if they have two parking spots, they're going to use those two parking spots. If they can fit four there, then they will fit four there. If they can park on the road, then they will park on the road. And I think it's for almost any subdivision, unless we put either physical barriers and or we put signage and we enforce it. I don't think that we could necessarily build our way out of the problem by adding more parking spaces, because I think that what we tend to see is they'll fill up those parking spaces, if not with cars, then with boats, if not with boats and cars, then with basketball nets. And I think that that goes for a lot of neighborhoods, not just self-help, but if we don't have a homeowners association that is the neighbors policing themselves, I think that's what we're liable to see. So I think that it's a combination of different things, from the physical barrier, no, you can't park, to the CCNRs and the clear, you know, notes on there that this is where you can and can't park, and then the ultimate enforcement. I'm very concerned about, you know, saying because these are self-help people that they will do this, even though in every instance so far they have done this.
Yeah, I, to put it maybe a little different way, it appears that the parking as designed meets our city standards.
Yeah.
So we probably can't say because it's self-help, or for that matter, if it wasn't self-help, you can't, I think, differentiate between the developer or the client type by saying that this development has to exceed our standards. It's a question of meeting our standards, and I'm hearing that from a parking standpoint, this configuration does meet our parking standards.
Okay. Councilperson Watson, Olson, and then Goodrich.
Well, that's my question too then. So I guess parking doesn't come up before the hearing examiner, or because when you built our neighborhood, our streets are very wide. So, I mean, there actually is room for people to park on both sides fairly, and they do. So, but when you're building something next to an arterial, that's just not an option, I guess. So by city standards, if you build on an arterial, you don't have to provide as wide a street or parking.
Well, can I get clarification? I mean, am I looking at your map? The way I looked at it is it was in the driveway, but that the pathway isn't wide enough. If someone is not parked in a driveway there and they're parked in what would be called a driveway, is that still going to be a legal parking spot? I mean, when you go through the TRC, the fire department looks at it, is they're looking at bringing our big truck in that pathway, but are any cars going to be allowed? I guess they can park halfway on the lawn and halfway not.
They could. You know, it ends up them being having just their private parking space behind where it's all private. The city doesn't really care how they park. The fire district is actually going to fight the fire from the roadways, the public roadways. Where they don't need to come on there.
Okay.
If there aren't any cars there. In the back of the houses, that is private, and while the city cares that it is still safe, it's ultimately going to be the homeowners association's responsibility to make sure that it isn't a traffic jam back there.
I didn't get my question answered, though, about the street. I mean, is there something different about on-street parking when you did like the Pacific Highlands neighborhood was designed with very wide streets, but because this is on an existing, are there different rules for parking?
They are not required to develop new streets, whereas Pacific Highlands was. Pacific Highlands was required to develop them to our street standards, which includes parking on either side. In this case, the applicant is benefiting by not needing to construct their own streets, and that's their right to have developed on a property that doesn't require them.
So I think the answer to your question is, if a developer builds on existing streets that do not accommodate on-street parking, our city standards don't require them to construct additional off-street parking. Their off-street parking requirements are the same for Pacific Highlands as they are for this development.
So maybe that's what we need to talk about later.
Yeah, maybe the zero lot line, for lack of a better term, might be some different
the wrong
parking.
Councilperson Olson.
I don't agree with, if they're on Malloy, everybody else that has to build on an existing street still has to build curbs, gutters, sidewalks.
Oh, no, I was just talking about the parking requirements.
What this is morphing into. I don't really care if they got two spots in the back and that's it. Too bad. Buyer beware. What we're all concerned about that morning was you will not park on the street. You will not be able to drive onto the sidewalk. So I don't care if you put stanchions along there, but I think all three of us were in agreement that it's going to be something in there that blocks that. And we keep hearing all these other things. I'm kind of, weren't you the same way that we thought there was going to be discussion about it? It seemed like there wasn't hardly any discussion about it. And here we are talking about it because we thought we were going to have a remedy for our concerns, and we have nothing but excuses.
We thought we were going to talk about curbs, whether you could do something.
And then we're almost using two different sets of arguments, one for Malloy and one for Thornton, because we're not going to require curbs, gutters, sidewalks on Thornton, because someday we might build something in there. That's absolutely bizarre to me. And we do have to be, well, it's one person of six. I'm not going to vote for this if it's, we need to be very specific in what we want that thing to look like. I do not want another Siddle mess because we weren't specific enough there. And we had to keep going back and arguing. We finally got something built there that's working. But we up here have to be very specific as to what we want done there so that it's done to our satisfaction. I'm not trying to insult anybody and say that we don't need to give them enough leeway to do it, because what I'm saying is it didn't work out when we tried to do civil. So that's why we want to be specific. And I'm not sure who it was that said this isn't about money. This is all about money. If we put less houses in there, we could have regular driveways, regular houses. And this wouldn't even be an issue because you'd be going over the sidewalk into your driveway. So we're cramming as many houses as we can in there to get the most money for it. And that's kind of created what this problem is. So if we can't have something very specific tonight that tells us how there's going to be a straight up and down, step off, step down curb to block driving up on it, I'm not going to go for it.
I want to go to Councilman Goodrich, and I'll go back to staff.
I got two comments and then a question. Actually, two questions. Have we closed the public hearing? Because we're starting to get personal comments.
Well, you are correct. At 7:15:39, I will close the public hearing.
No, he never did.
He never said that.
Yeah, good.
Sam, and you didn't catch that?
Good. Yeah, he's been ignoring me for about 30 minutes now.
So. Oh, yeah.
Thank you. Who is that little guy over there?
As far as the variance goes to put the houses up closer to the street, I think that's a great idea. I have no problem with that aspect of it. My concern is the curbs, gutters, and sidewalks. Why we require them in some place, some developments we don't. Correll Commons, when that was put in where I live, they put in a curb, gutter, and sidewalk on Main Street, only to have it ripped out in a few years. So the idea that it's only going to be there a few years, to me, I don't buy it, because we did it to Correll. Made them put in this curbs, gutter, sidewalks, and then turned around and ripped it right up. So, and the street improvement there. So that's what I'm at. Now, how to deal with what we talked about in committee versus the project, I can't see, and part of me says, go ahead and approve this, the project, so it can, you know, go ahead and get your, you know, work going and things like that. But then I agree with Councilmember Olson, I don't want to leave something open-ended either, and end up with the Vista, you know, how are we going to Vista Siddle thing. And, you know, well, that's not what we talked about at council meeting, and then have to go through that whole thing, you know, again with another builder. So I don't know, from staff, is there a way to separate the two issues?
As soon as you're done with your questioning, I'm going to turn to staff because they look like they would like to respond.
Yeah.
Okay, to staff.
we were looking at our development code here, and it appears that our code requires, you know, 3/4 street, and then, like most codes, then it goes on into a little more detail. And it states in here that a couple of things. One is, if in the discretion of the public works director, we have an upcoming street project, I think they talk about within 2 years in the code, if we have an upcoming street project, then they can simply pay an in lieu of fee towards that project. Or if they're just doing a project that will need to be torn out later, they can also pay an in lieu of fee. There's some things they can't defer, which is the interior things. But it appears that if you as a body want to have a 3/4 street with sidewalks, you can do it. If you want to instruct the public works director to have some sort of a physical barrier and keep the existing concrete sidewalk and put in the new concrete at-grade sidewalk because of the whole future alignment issues, you can do that as well. So there's discretion in the code, so the public works director can, in he or she's best interest, decide whether the cost of an improvement warrants the improvement. But you all are tasked with approving our city standards, and in this case, you could, to the extent you want, require either barriers or 3/4 street. Now, 3/4 street is going to give you a curb. I mean, if that's what you want, or whether you wanted a higher extruded curb or guard dogs and claymore mines,
claymores
would be good. Claymores would be really good.
But it's within your discretion.
Okay, Councilperson Ingram.
So let me understand this, because I want to make sure we're doing the right thing. So we can make a requirement here to Public Works Department without sending this back to the hearing examiner.
Yes.
Okay. In that case, I would like to move that we approve this project by, with the provision that we instruct the Public Works Department to put a physical barrier between the traffic lane and a concrete path that is there for the safety of all concerned.
So I think Councilperson Olson is going to agree with you. What he would like, is that sufficient detail, or would you like more detail explaining that?
After Siddle, what do you think? After the Siddle mess, what do you
I can clarify that motion a little by stating that it will not be what I call a California curb.
Okay, for
so it's a vertical drop off.
So we can discuss his motion. Do I have a second?
I will second.
Okay,
there's
a second. Councilperson Watson.
One quick thing too. It doesn't have to be concrete. The physical barrier could be a series of street trees, shrubbery.
Not a
it doesn't have to be.
They better be really close together.
Shrubbery?
And then you got a, but then you've got a vision problem.
I'm just saying that.
Well, I want Public Works to get a direction from council
right.
of what they're going to be happening.
My vision of that barrier is a vertical, straight drop off curve of at least 6 inches.
That's crazy.
I agree.
We'll need to be engineered, and we'll have to follow the. Just the basic design guidelines.
Yeah, it was basically the same thing we did up by Siddle. I think that's about a 6-inch rise.
Okay. All right. So, Councilperson Watson?
My only concern is council is designing sidewalks and curbs. And so I don't want to do what Siddle did either, because every time they built it, we would tell them to tear it up, and we just kept, you know, bring me a rock. And so is there a way to just tell her, to tell Janice, we want you to do what? Thank you.
The way the motion is phrased, I believe, gives city staff a great amount of latitude to ensure that there's a physical barrier between the street and the walking path.
Okay.
And that's it. So the council said there will be a barrier. Staff, do your job. That's what the current motion is.
Okay, based on our current ordinances and what we would normally expect, and I realize why you don't want to
design standards, and you know.
Yeah. I understand you're worried that we're going to be tearing it all up, so it's a waste of money. And I do understand.
No, not the extruded curb.
Oh, okay.
Just the full curb gutter site. Never mind.
No, it's okay. I know it's frustrating.
Similar to what you're kind of thinking, similar to what's on Malloy now, to prevent people from parking on the sidewalk.
It doesn't prevent them from parking on the sidewalk. They park there all the time.
Well, not where the curb is. I'm thinking for another section. Okay, I'm going to go to staff.
Okay, just a really quick process thing for you to understand. At this point in the process, the Public Works Department has looked at the rough drawings and estimates of stormwater and all of the civil plans. The full civil plans have not and will never be reviewed in full prior to the preliminary plat approval. So that review is still yet to occur. So this has not been fully engineered. It's been engineered enough where we know that it's going to work, but the precise build-ready construction documents aren't there yet. So this may have come up as we reviewed the civil drawings, and we might have reached the same conclusions. In this case, we're getting direction from council, which helps to know what direction we're going. Right. We might have ended up in the same position that you are just in a couple weeks or so.
So I think you have the original motion and this amendment.
There was an amendment.
No amendment.
Okay. Just a clarification.
So you can vote on that, and I think you've given staff the direction you're looking for, and the staff promised to show council that detail as soon as they can.
You should
have
to wait for civil
drawings.
Yeah. All right, great.
Just not
a little. Councilperson Olson.
And so we're still going to give them a pass on sidewalks on Thornton.
It sounds like that would be correct.
I will not be supporting that.
Okay.
You can amend the motion.
I should say, there's already a concrete sidewalk on Malloy, and the drawings here show a new one on Thornton. Right, a concrete path. A concrete path. So, I mean, that isn't there now.
It would have the same barrier.
That would exactly. So what I'm thinking is that what you see along Malloy for the pathway, if you add a little barrier, is what you're going to see down Thornton, which, of course, isn't there now. The issue...
I think I understand what you're saying.
Yeah, we're talking just an at-grade concrete walkway as opposed to a full-engineered... You know, curb, gutter, you know, that we have to worry about.
But we're still giving a pass from what would normally be required of anybody else.
Are we?
Well, no. What were...
The answer would be yes. They're not...
Yes, I'd say yes, yes and no. The code does allow for deviations. but yes, the code calls for 3/4 except for blah, 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 and... This, I think what I'm hearing is one of those blah, blah.
So the difference, Councilperson Olson, is that at times, and I hope I don't open this up to lawsuits coming from the past, at times we required it when we probably shouldn't have.
I could understand that if we were exceeding his property line, but we're not. That's the difference to me. Everybody that improves within their property line is fixing this stuff. We just did it on, what is it, Hovander, that new gym thing? Hmm. How come he didn't get a pass? Maybe what we're opening up is not lawsuits, but everybody else going to come running and want the same break they got.
Staff response, or you're having a little conversation that, or maybe you're discussing pizza afterwards?
No, we're discussing the project, but I'm not good at reading lips.
Okay. I know that each project is unique, and Public Works especially tries to work pretty hard to come up with solutions that achieve what we want, but are also flexible enough. So we can't really do absolutely the same thing everywhere in the city. 3/4 street is the standard, and there are times when we ask them to do a little bit less than them for reasons that would be, I guess, in the professional judgment of the Public Works Director. In this case, again... If the council wants, they can say it. And
I have a motion before you, so right. I guess you know. I mean, I think you have enough information to vote. Councilperson Birch and then Goodrich.
So what I'm understanding is, if we put a curb and gutter in, there's still going to be a grassy area leading to the concrete path.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, standard. That would be the standard profile.
I'm okay with that. That would be
Councilor Goodrich.
I'm gonna support this with the motion that it is, but I think we need come back and have a more of a discussion on this our city code in this area, because this really is a kind of a concern of mine in regards to project. We just had a project that was done on Hamlin. That 40-unit thing where no street improvement was done at all, because at the discretion of the Public Works Director, they did all the response in the alley. So here, I just have a feeling that if we have more and more development in our city, and the developers not having to fix the road, who's going to fix the road? We are. If Hamlin gets to the point, we're going to be putting in the curbs, gutters, sidewalks, possibly, you know, on these streets. Like you said, the developers, in a way, are getting a pass on it. So I think for future discussion, we need to look at this and maybe tighten up our code a little bit better, clarify it.
Staff hears you, and then we'll put that for further discussion before you have a motion and second before you. I see no further discussion. All in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
All opposed?
No.
Okay. Motion carries 4-1. So we'll move on. Sam, we'll go see if our wandering councilperson is
asleep
out there.
Okay. So we did approve.
Council, great discussion, though. Needed to be done.
And that's why we brought an easy one to you first, so the next ones will be more complicated.
The timing is everything.
Thank you, guest. Okay. Is he back? Coming back?
He's coming.
You picked the wrong discussion.
I
I went for a long walk. Okay, next up is the bid award for the Church Road. Welcome again, Katie Ratter.
Hi, thank you. So we opened bids last Wednesday. I think we received 8 bids. If you took a look at the bid tab, they were all very competitive. It was a very tight bid from low to high. Carl Curcio Brothers did have the low bid. All their bid documents were in order. We have received authorization to award from both WSDOT, who manages the federal funds that we've received on this project, as well as the Transportation Improvement Board, which manages the state funds. So Public Works is recommending we award the contract, or that council award the contract to Carl Curcio for their bid amount of just over $3 million. We're asking for a contingency as well, for a total contract and contingency of $3,484,789.80.
80 cents.
80 cents. What a bargain.
Councilperson Olson is first.
Was that the budget, Katie?
The engineer's estimate on this project was just over $3.4 million. So generally we ask for, you know, the contingency, so it's well within the budget.
Move to accept.
Okay, moving second. Any further discussion? Okay, seeing none, all in favor, signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? Okay, motion carries.
Thank you, Council.
6-0. Okay, next up is contract approval for Church Road Management.
Okay, so now we've got a contract to build, and we need help to make sure it gets built correctly. So we are we're asking for award of the construction engineering and construction management. Basically what this does is this provides inspection services, number one. When the contractor's out there, there's always at least one inspector on site watching what they're doing, their methods, documenting all of the materials, information. We do have federal money on this project, so the paperwork is pretty significant. This contract, we're recommending award to Reichart and Eby for inspection. They subcontract out the materials testing. That subconsultant is Geotest, as well as subconsultant of Compass Point for the surveying services. So I presented this at committee. I updated it not long after committee because it was found out that some work that we're doing as far as the utility relocation, if we included it as part of this contract, we'd be paying for it anyway, the city would. But if we include it as part of this contract, it's eligible for reimbursement through our Transportation Improvement Board. So it's like, who wouldn't want to save a little bit of money if we could? So that's what I updated here. So basically that bumps up the contract amount from the $440,000 to $467,000 and change. That reimbursable amount is 21% through TIB, so that would give us about $5,600 back that we wouldn't be able to be able to submit for reimbursement if it wasn't part of this contract. So I don't know if anybody has any questions.
Goodrich is first, and Ingram.
I have a question that just popped into my head. Mm-hmm. When you talked about Geotech, or whatever it was, you said, doing off-site. In other words, a concrete truck pulls up, they take a scoop of concrete and save it and then ship it out?
No, they test it on-site.
Or they test it?
Take it for
Geotest or materials testing, you know, there's strict guidelines that that go into these projects. You know, we have our ingredient list, and then you want to make sure that your ingredients are good. And so not only do you want to watch the method in which they're putting everything together, but you want to make sure that, you know, we're getting good stuff. So Geotest, they'll do compaction testing for the subgrade, the gravel base, asphalt. They'll take samples of concrete. There's specified testing procedures. You know, for every X number of yards of concrete that you pour, you have to get so many tests. You test it for air entrainments, lump. To make sure that the aggregate's correct and that sort of thing. So that's the kind of service that Geotest provides. And we're obligated not only to the taxpayers, because it's the right thing to do to make sure the materials that we get are decent, but we're also obligated through our getting awarded federal and state grant funds to make sure that all those materials are tested. So it's not really, I mean, it's required.
How long does it take to take it? Like, if they get a test back, and my thing is pour some concrete in the ground and they test it. And then they have to, you know, find out, oh, we got a bad batch for some reason, they have to go in and rip it all out.
No, it's done on site.
No, that's not what she said. She said they send it out.
It depends on the test. So
it's totally on the test.
It depends. So usually if we specify a certain gravel base, they'll go out and they'll take an acceptance sample. First of all, the material has to come from an approved pit. Before they even start using material and hauling it onto site, they go out and they do an acceptance sample to make sure it meets spec. As it comes in and it gets incorporated into the project every X number of tons, it gets sampled. There is some delay in test reports, you know, concrete strength tests. If it at 30 days it's supposed to be at 3,000 PSI or whatever the spec is, you know, you might not know that until later. But that's why the inspector's job is very important, is that he collects tickets, he watches the materials come in, he knows what, you know, what concrete batch went where, and if it doesn't meet spec, then, you know, we have some latitude as far as how we deal with that. The city might get a credit if the material isn't, you know, it's maybe not quite up to spec, but it's not worth tearing out and pouring in new because it'll last. Or, you know, it might be to the point where this is going to fail. It's not a good value. Tear it out and start over. So.
Yeah, well, thank you, guys. Kind of curious about how all that, you know, testing the federal stuff worked.
Councilperson Ingram.
Well, I will move to approve the construction management inspection contract, and I'm sure going to miss driving up there for 8 months, not being able to see those beautiful lights. I love those lights.
Second.
Seconded by Councilperson Birch. Okay, seeing no further discussion, all in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
All opposed? Motion carries 6-0.
Thank you.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you.
Okay, moving on. Resolution for the supplemental UGA. Welcome again, Yuri Burnett.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. Good evening, Council. Council Committee discussed this item on Wednesday. In your consent agenda, you adopted a resolution supporting the Whatcom County population and employment allocation, so thank you for that. Council Committee felt that it was appropriate to approve that resolution, but voice Council's displeasure, if you are displeased, with the County Council's apparent political action to include a transfer of development rights requirement in the non-binding resolution. So we took your direction and we added a number of recitals and whereases talking about how we're disappointed. But then, and I want to point your attention to this, we wanted to take it one step further to say, if we're going to be talking about transfer of development rights, that we should actually talk about transfer of development rights and actually lay out a process through which we would do that, instead of in 4 or 5 years coming back and saying, gosh darn it, the cities didn't talk about TDRs. It's apparent to me that some on the county council would rather talk about the mythical idea of a transfer of development rights program and then ask their staff and our staff to do research to find a successful one. But in truth, no amount of research is going to find a successful one in Washington because none exists. So rather than trying to pretend that we can just open up some books and find a solution, what we're proposing to do is we actually create a solution, but that we need to work with them on it. So we have a number of whereases. We would expect to send this to the Whatcom County Council. And, again, not just to do it kind of half-cocked, but to you know, go the full boat and to say if we're going to do this as part of the 2016 process, then we want to have a successful program. So that's it. Any questions?
Questions of the director, Councilperson Watson?
I just moved to approve the resolution as written.
Okay, move and second. Further discussion on that? All in favor, signify by saying aye.
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 All opposed? Motion carries 6-0.
Thanks, Council.
That was
outstanding job by the Community Development Director.
That was incredibly well written.
Outstanding. Okay, so discussion on the stormwater utility, discussion only, we're not looking for action. We'll go to the finance director.
Good evening, council, staff members, and
customers.
members of the public. The last page of your handout, if you want to take it out and look at it, or not, I'm going to kind of read the high points for you. Discussion tonight is being able to finance our capital improvement program for the Storm Fund for this year, 2014. The capital expenditures comes in right now $815,000. Big chunks of $350,000 for the church road, $125,000 for the storm pipe and the City Hall parking lot. Two ways to go. We've considered a lot of different ways. We boil it down to two different spreadsheets, if you will. One is with moderate rate increases, $10 a month now, that moves to $11 a month in 2015, another dollar a month in 16, another dollar a month in 17, another dollar a month in 18. So by 2018, it'd be $14 a month for residents. In conjunction, however, we would, if council approves, go out for $500,000 revenue bond. Revenue bond meaning water, sewer, storm. I don't know why they call it a revenue bond. They call it a revenue bond. $500,000 because, again, the council approves. We need to go out for sewer bonds this year as well, so we would combine those two. And another version is not to borrow money, but pay as you go. Still covers the $815,000 capital needs this year, but it requires a rather stiff storm rate increase mid-year this year. We're now at 10. This would go to $14 mid-year this year, and then 15, and then 16 in 2016. So a couple different ways to go at it. Pay as you go with a stiffer rate increase, or $500,000 of borrowing, 20-year bonds at 4.5% interest or better. You've approved the capital plan for Storm and some rather important projects, including Church Road, which you've talked about tonight, and that storm pipe we have to go to get it done in conjunction with the library. So what say you?
Discussion. Council? Oh, I'm sure you have an opinion. Okay, Councilperson Watson first, and then Goodrich.
I would prefer to not borrow money. I realize it's a large raise. I mean, going from 10 to 14. You know, psychologically, it's a lot of money. It's a 40% raise. I would prefer that we just raised it up and didn't borrow the money because it's going to cost us more in the long run doing the interest. The one discussion I would like to open up, though, is do we need to do everything in 2014? I don't want to touch Church Road. Church Road has to be done. But are there any projects that could be pushed out? And I realize pushing them out has ramifications, especially when we talk about the pond. So that's my question for staff. Is there anything that should council not want to raise the rates? Is there anything we could push? I know we're going to have to do it eventually. We
so
just take longer to do it.
So on discussion, would you like all questions from council, or would you like staff to maybe...
Let's see what everyone else is thinking.
Questions, and so staff, yeah. Right now the questions, we'll go to staff afterwards. So Councilperson Goodrich, and then Ingram after that.
Sitting on the opposite side of the room, I take the opposite view. Amazing, isn't it? I would rather see the lower increases and then the borrowing. The money. Not that I'm a big fan of borrowing, I just know that for some people that, you know, big of an increase is going to have an effect. I've known some seniors that have had $5 at the end of the month, and that's all they've gotten left. To do a rate increase or whatever of that big, if there was some way hybrid, but seeing we have the two choices tonight, I would lean toward the borrowing of the money versus the big fee increase.
Okay. Next up is Councilperson Ingram.
Well, I'm a little bit torn. I'm one of those seniors, you know, that fixed income and all that crap. But I really see the value of biting the bullet and taking the bigger increase, because we already talked about tonight that we may be looking at going out to borrow money for facilities upgrades and improvements and redoing the pavilion and making it a viable community center. And I don't really want to borrow twice. That's the thing that bothers me. You know, and so I know it sounds like a lot of money to jump it up to $14 mid-year. But my question for Mark that I don't think I've ever asked him before is that $14, would that increase be a $4 increase per bill or per month?
That's per month. So it's we bill on it by month.
So it would be $8 per bill.
Instead of $20 per bill now, it'd be, what,
$28.
That's, yeah, $28 for two-month billing cycle.
Councilperson Olson.
I'm kind of half here and half there. I like her idea of scrubbing what we're looking at because I, one of the ones that I question and still amazed that we're trying to justify it in stormwater is a street sweeper. When the last one just came out of streets, it seems like, and I understand why we're doing it, we're broke. We're trying to find creative ways of moving stuff around and finding money. But stormwater is not a new golden goose that we can dump all these things that we can slightly tie to streets and having to scrub it. And that's bizarre. And I'm with Brent. I really don't want to see have to keep jumping these rates up because, like you said, it's hurting. Some people can't afford that. I understand some of the things after Wendy's presentation, the things that we need to do, but maybe we need to see if we can prioritize some, like Kathy was saying.
For discussion from council, Councilperson Metzler.
Well, I've been, I think, consistent in my discomfort at rising water and sewer bills that have these other things added to it. I note that in the last year, at $17 a month, that's about $215 a year, or something like that. And I think there are other options, and I wanted to throw one at council to chew on, is our treasurer has indicated to us that we have another source of revenue that we could have been using and in the future probably will use, and that is applying the 9% utility tax, the 9% utility tax on stormwater, on water and sewer hookups. If we're building 100 homes, that's about $120,000 a year to the city. I realize that we're looking at that $120,000 as revenue to support other areas and concerns that we've listed here that are coming at us. But we can legally and morally use that water for stormwater. Those are revenues that are generated from new homes and new hookups. Water and sewer, and stormwater fits that general orbit of those types of utilities. I don't want to see us to go to 14. I don't want to see us going into debt. I'd like to propose a hybrid that we could go to $2, but also use some of those new unexpected revenues that are coming from hookups from water and sewer, and use that for stormwater.
Just if I could clarify,
sure.
Mr. Mayor.
Yeah.
Sure. Councilmember Metzler, are you saying that you would take general fund money and transfer it to the storm system? Is that what you're saying?
We could.
And we have done that in the past. $800,000 was taken of sales tax money and solid waste tax money to prop up this young utility.
I understand that.
Utilities must stand on their own. Yes, it's legal to take general fund sales tax money or general fund utility tax money, where that utility tax comes from electricity, natural gas, cell phones, regular phones, or our own city utilities. Why would you support this utility with general fund revenues? To me, it is a very bad idea.
Well, thank you for
it's my opinion.
Yeah. Another way of doing this, which would be using utility monies, is to lower the 9% utility tax, which I have problems with when we adopted it, and then use the revenues from that utility tax on the hookups in the general fund, and there the final bill to the customer is the lower amount.
Fuzzy math. I'm not following you,
yeah,
sir.
I'll say it again.
I don't follow.
We have additional general fund revenues because of this utility tax applied to hookups.
True.
About $120,000.
Hookups are very minor in the storm fund.
Pardon?
Very minor amounts.
I know.
In the storm
I'm just saying
fund.
That the general fund revenues have been increased and will be increased by the tax on the hookups.
Correct.
Okay. So because the general fund revenues have been increased, we could, if we wanted to, decrease the utility tax by a certain amount to offset that increase to the general fund, take your $4 a month that you want to add for the stormwater, and the customer's bill wouldn't jump by $4. It would be less than that.
Well, that's something I don't want to do. Council approved the CIP of $815,000. Now, you can change that and disapprove it. That would make sense,
if that's what
you wanted to do.
I apologize. Say that last part again.
You approved the capital improvement program for storm at $815,000 this year. We're trying to finance that. Certainly, council can disapprove that CIP in the storm fund and lower those amounts or push some projects out into the future. Can't really push the water thing in the City Hall parking lot.
Yeah, I'm not suggesting at all. I agree with the projects. I agree with the CIP.
Very good, sir.
Yeah, I'm suggesting that we could go your $4 and not have any debt, but you can also lower the utility tax if council wanted to.
Still not following you, and now's not the time to try to do that.
Can I clarify really quick for you, Councilor? What you're saying is reduce the utility tax from water and sewer into the general fund and then increase the stormwater utility fee on the bills by an amount so that you're not going to see an impact to the person's bill, but you are going to enhance the revenue going into stormwater while reducing the revenue going into general fund.
So you're reducing the revenue to general fund?
By $120,000.
Well, that's not going to happen.
Well, it's not reducing the general fund revenues because we've not used those monies yet. That $120,000 that's going to come in the future from taxing the hookups, we've never received that before. That's new money.
That money is coming in now. It's in place.
$14,000 a month?
About.
And that started in January?
Retroactively, yes, it did.
Okay. It's still new money to the city.
It is new money. Yes, it is.
Okay, so that's one proposal. Councilperson Watson?
I guess my concern is taking out of the general fund. We already have issues with the general fund being underfunded. I mean, I thought next year we
projected by 2020 we'd be bankrupt like Detroit if no other action is taken in the general fund.
Yeah. I mean, so we can't take stuff out of the general fund. I'm not comfortable.
I wouldn't recommend it.
No, I'm doing that. I understand what you're trying to do. I really do. I don't want to mess with the general fund. I want to have a discussion. Let's just talk about whether we're willing to pay more to do what we need to do or decide that we don't need to do as much. If there's no will here to raise the fees, then we just won't do some of the things that we said we would do. Because we did say we would do these things. Now we just don't want to pay for them.
Now remember, this is discussion only, so we're not asking for action. So.
Well, we are actually because we need a direct staff. We need
we're looking
staff
for an ordinance
to come back.
Next time.
Hopefully.
Councilperson Goodrich?
Well, that was going to be my question of what you really wanted from us tonight. If it's a discussion, it seems like we have one side of the room and the other side of the room and something in the middle with the two plans. And I don't know how we're going to come up with a way to...
So let's ask the finance director, where are we at in terms of our financing deadlines?
Well, we're right on the cusp where the council approves we need to go out for sewer bonds, and we need to get that money scheduled for June 9th to get our money for sewer bonds. And if you so approve to add some more money in for storm, we're on the same schedule. We're actually a little behind. It takes about 6-8 weeks to get all the stuff to the bond broker, do all the phone calls, do all the bond rating, all that stuff.
Yeah, I have a... tentatively for the first meeting in May 7th, to actually do the sewer and storm fund bond authorization.
But yeah. I think he's asking if you did not and you did not do anything on Storm, you still have Church Road, and you still have the parking lot, which is the main drain for most of you. It starts all the way at the high school and beyond. That's where that drain goes to. It goes to all towns. That's a major stormwater line that feeds everyone. If that did not happen, and we had to pay cash for those projects, what happens?
We don't have the cash.
We don't have the cash.
That's actually on the first page here is without the borrowing.
I want
so
that emphasized.
This year, if we, that's assuming that we went from 10 to 14. If we went to 10 to 14 mid this year, according to the spreadsheet, and we did the $815,000 in capital, we would end the year with $91,000 in the storm. Now, I'm assuming that if we didn't do the $10 to $14 increase and still did $815,000,
it goes negative.
We go negative.
So it goes back to Councilperson Watson, though, has asked staff, or I believe you would ask staff to say, what stormwater projects must be, what must
yes.
be done.
Right.
Yes, because there are some that absolutely have to be done this year.
Yes.
And that's why we kind of evolved this around the concept of either debt financing or no debt financing, because the idea of a third alternative, no rate increases, would mean that we would seriously have to go back and redo our capital improvement plan. Because without any rate increases, we can't even do our CIP this year, no less than the next few years. So if you're comfortable with the CIP, the two methods would be debt financing with moderate storm increases, no debt financing with more aggressive.
So those are kind of the
rate increases.
Two choices that you're looking at direction.
Right. And that's what we had hoped. That's where we thought the whole conversation was going. Now, the idea of re-examining the CIP and restructuring the CIP is not something that we had envisioned, so we didn't work up anything about. That's something that would.
No, that's my fault. I didn't ask you to do that. So.
But work with staff.
You've seen this several times. I can read the highlights. We got the 350 Church Road, the 125 Storm Pike in the parking lot, 180 grand for Neubauer Pond expansion, Brown Road culvert design, and Third Avenue improvements. I think we're getting federal state funds on the Third Avenue. Very good. So we, and the revenue's in there, so we kind of got to do the Third Avenue thing because we're getting grant money. So I guess, you know, Neubauer Pond expansion, Brown Road culvert design.
Just top of my head, I know with the Neubauer Pond expansion, that we're pond's pretty much full, so that would slow down or perhaps even prevent some development. We'd have to do a moratorium with that.
So
we do a moratorium in one of our major industrial areas.
Our fastest growing area of the city. Retail.
Okay, moving on to, because council wants to speak some more. So Councilperson Ingram, Goodrich, and then Burst.
No, I'm not.
Councilperson Ingram.
In the interest of trying to be a little bit lean here, let's get this moving along. I would make a motion that we approve, I don't know which one this is, Proposal A or Proposal B, the $1 increase in January with $500,000 this year.
Good. It's on page 259 of your packet.
But I don't know whether that's option A or option B.
That's the one with long-term debt.
Yes.
And you bring this forward as an actual resolution.
Exactly. If the majority of you are comfortable with the option of some long-term debt financing, we will, at our next meeting, bring back the ordinance.
It's the fact I'm more comfortable with a smaller increase.
Okay, that's been moved and seconded. Councilperson Birch?
I'm with Kathy. I don't think we should borrow. We could be sitting here at this time next year with more rate increases, with the loans outstanding. How many years has it been the $10 rate?
3 years. In this proposal on page 259, it will have been 3 years.
I'm okay with the rate increases and no borrowing the money.
That would be in your package
on page 260.
That's the pay cash as you go option, which is page
the $14 a month.
The 260.
Yeah.
option, and so that would be option B.
And was there a second to Councilmember Ingram?
Yes, there was.
Thank you.
So I guess we'll call A debt financing.
Councilmember Ingram is option A. That's before you. That's been proposed. So that's the option before you to vote on. So, okay, and then B would be no, to increase the rate and not borrow. Councilperson Mutchler?
Yeah, for this council member, if these are the options, I would support the lower rate.
Option A.
The debt rate. And what that does, it invites future residents of the city to participate in this as well, in this as well as they start paying their lockdowns.
Okay, and now, so any further discussion? We have option A, everyone understand? Mm-hmm. Option B, this is just to direct staff to come forward with a resolution.
Ordinance for the rates. Yeah.
A is the debt.
A is the debt.
And that's what the motion
is. The motion is to approve the smaller increase with long-term financing.
And then if that didn't go, then we'd open up and you could decide it. You could propose option B. Okay, any further discussion? Okay, you're going to vote yay, and I'm going to go roll call vote so you can kind of do it. Sorry.
That's okay.
Option A, Councilperson Ingram's proposal.
Councilmember Watson?
Aye.
Councilmember Olson?
Aye.
Councilmember Ingram?
Aye.
Councilmember Mutchler?
Aye.
Councilmember Birch?
Nay.
Councilmember Goodrich?
Aye.
I have passed.
Yep. All right.
Easy man. Sorry, I caught
me off guard. So you've directed staff to go in that direction. You'll come back for your next council.
Thank you, Council.
Okay. Good discussion. Appreciate all of you.
No worries.
Okay, moving on to mayor reports. To inform you is I wanted to have a better meeting space for the Parks, Recreation, Trails Advisory Board. They have been meeting at City Hall. There was a little problem with someone opening the door with them. We won't mention who failed in that endeavor. It's no sense making a fool of that person.
Don't make Lori feel bad.
They had to meet out in the parking lot on a cold night. Wasn't a great night. But with the projects that we'll discuss later, I think the Parks Board needs a home. They're going to need some more space to put up maps and pictures. So we've always had the Bergsma House, but it basically hasn't been used by anybody than the office for Joe and John, our Parks Board. And so last week, a lot of great young people from the Boys and Girls Club helped me clean up the meeting room. We moved all the junk that's been passed through there. We cleaned the floors. We cleaned the windows. We cleaned there. This Saturday from 9 to 12, the employees from Barleans are going to donate their time, and they're going to help me paint in there, so we'll have new paint. Wow. And then we have to move the furniture that's in the pizza annex. There's a nice conference room table and some nice chairs. We'll move those to the Bergsma House. So the Bergsma House will basically have a nicer meeting room. Our liaison, Councilperson Goodrich, will have a key. I will have a key, and then the Parks Board Chairman will have a key. There's also an office in there that we can use file cabinets and everything. So kind of a nicer move for the Parks Board. So
when are we
inviting
gonna get
you,
a nice
if you're not doing anything Saturday from 9 to 12.
I'm not going
to
paint this room.
I'm in charge of this one. I make things happen. Because I go beg people to help me. I'm not opposed to begging people. So if you're not doing anything Saturday from 9 to 12 at the Bergsma House, we're having a painting, landscaping, cleaning party. Love to see you there.
If you could take a break about 11 o'clock and come over and, to the community meal, I'll feed you lunch.
Mm-hmm. Hmm. What's
I'll have to see. Depends on how much we got done. I never want to stop a
volunteer. Meatloaf.
Oh. Typically, volunteer groups are
gravy.
From 9 to 12, and then they disappear
gravy.
And float off.
If you send them away to eat, they'll never come back.
Yeah, they'll never come back. The food will be so good, I'll never see them. But maybe we can get, with enough volunteers, we don't
be finished. Well, we serve till 12, Gary.
Okay, there you go.
So
and then I'm going to let my two outstanding young employees, they're in charge of Star Park. Take my time. That's the mayor report. So I'd love to hear about Star Park and what we're doing this week.
Well, I want to compliment Sam, actually.
Sam, not
rare. I'll pay attention.
Sam not only let a huge computer virus into City Hall and destroyed our computers for 48 hours, and then partially denied credit for it. But actually, Sam has done an amazing job getting the word out about Star Park and about our design day that we're having on Wednesday. So just to let you know what's going on. Each and every elementary school kid in the Ferndale city limits was given the ability to have one of these. We'll see whether or not the school let them actually take home these flyers today, but we printed
sharp
about
edges.
1,500 of them. And this is something that Sam has scheduled, and Sam, do you want me to describe it, or do you want me to describe Design Day?
I'll talk about it.
All right, well, so I don't know if there's anything less, except for Sam Bulos has donated to us $2,500 to fly out a consultant from a company called Leathers and Associates from New York City, and they are going to be here on Wednesday and start the design. We've also gotten contributions or offers of contributions from the Ferndale Kiwanis, from Samson Rope, from Stacy Miller, from FastCap. Just today, they informed us that they are donating $1,000. Lemmy Nation remains interested, and we're going to see whether or not they will donate as well. Hagen's has donated refreshments to us. Our own Carol Birch is donating cupcakes as well.
I don't know why you don't let him do this.
I've been trying to let him in, but he apparently doesn't want to talk. I just hear him mumbling.
Why don't we just say, Sam, would you like to finish the presentation?
It's 10 o'clock.
I do want to talk a little bit about
because it's painful watching this.
Thing. So I want to give Rob Nordhaus, the Parks Board Chairperson, a lot of credit because he spent 2 years basically being ignored by us as an entire city hall about this project. And he worked on the zone to go out and find vendors for playground equipment and come up with the idea of this Star Park, which... I'm now using the term Star Park, but I used to call it the featured park because that's what it is. It's going to be the large regional park that will serve 30,000 people in our metro area, the whole school district. And we started applying for this grant, which Rob is really the one who kind of pushed us toward it, and then the mayor kind of directed Jory and I to help. Once that started, we started looking at Leathers as well. So what we're going to do is bring two different designs to the community on Wednesday night, and ask them what their thoughts are. One of the designs, we've already had designed, thanks to a company called Sightlines. It was free. That's very nice. The equipment is going to be very sturdy. It'll have a very good warranty. There's a large diversity of what all the different types of apparatus in the park, in the playground area will be. And then the other one is the Leathers one. And Yuri and I came up with that one based on the feedback that we got from the city of Linden, which already has a project like that called the Million Smiles Park. And if you know anyone with children from ages 2 to, 20 at this point, because some of those kids were around when it was built in 2006, you will hear that that is probably one of the most adored parks in all of the county for families. Theirs is fully wood-constructed. Ours would not be, but theirs is fully wood-constructed, and it was built by volunteers, 2,000 volunteers. Spent 9,000 volunteer hours on that project. It was a very large community effort. And so that is what we're trying to do here in Ferndale, and we're very passionate that we can do that. A very important part of that is we're applying for state grant funding for this. That's a matching program. And those volunteer hours equate to $14 per hour for that match. So we need 2,000 volunteers, and we need 9,000 volunteer hours. So what we're doing with Leathers is, they're being flown out here thanks to a generous contribution from a local business person. And that's $950 plus their travel time to be out here to visit with local school children. And literally the exact same day they get feedback from them, they will come up with the initial schematic design for that playground. And then from 6:30 to 8 p.m. on Wednesday night, we will unveil that schematic and show everybody. The kids will get to kind of take a virtual tour of it. We do really want to be objective here, though, because we do have two designs. And so we're going to ask the kids to color a star and then vote on which one they like, and their parents as well. And anyone from the community, regardless if they have parents or not, should come out to this. It's very important that we get a lot of feedback.
Because we don't anticipate using any park impact fees.
Correct. We will not be using city funding mostly for this. This is at the Ferndale High School cafeteria.
Somewhere on. I'm glad you said that tonight. Because I'm glad
and it's 6:30?
6:30.
Somewhere online, I
and
saw.
And there'll be cupcakes from Carol's Cupcakes there.
Cupcakes and
that's enough. There's enough reason to go just right there.
So we're very excited about it.
Again, I would stand in the central.
Yeah, had our cupcakes.
So that's it. We've been doing a really large push, and we've gotten a lot of feedback from the community that they've heard about it. So we're crossing our fingers and hoping that they've come. And we've already have received generous contributions, and we really appreciate that.
I wanted to say my group of young men from the Boys and Girls Club, I asked them what they wanted, and they would like a working spaceship that really does launch.
It's great. When you talk to kids, like, we appreciate that.
Well,
I know where there's a couple of old ones.
I can think of a couple of kids I'd like to put in it.
You know, but that's...
Get off my lawn!
Yuri and Sam have worked, and it's just great to hear what they can do.
As long as it doesn't come back.
You do that. I know my wife has done this in her class. And that's great, though. Mm-hmm. I mean, but that's... what they're asking for is like, well, can we have a spaceship that goes in there? It's like, well, what if you had a spaceship that you can imagine go over there? Yeah, that'd be okay too. So it was great. So I'd love to see all there Wednesday night at the cafeteria. This is a great thing. If we can get this done, the state has put us in the line. I got a great email from somebody we're competing against that wished us well today, so I wanted to share that with you. Our former parks director from the state of Wenatchee, or city of Wenatchee, emailed me and said, I know we're going for the same grant. Good luck to you. I hope you get it.
Tell him best of luck 2016.
So, great job. So I hope to see you all there Wednesday night. Okay, so that's it for mayor reports. Council reports. Councilperson Birch.
The Heritage Society is having a chili feed benefit this coming Friday from 4:30 to 7 p.m., and it's to benefit Emma Youngquist, the young lady that was hit by a car last year in Bellingham.
Eleanor King's granddaughter.
At Burt's right. House?
At the Tillicum House.
Or excuse me, Tillicum. At 4:30 to 6:30?
4:30 to 7 p.m., and it's chili and hot dogs and dessert and beverage.
Homemade
and
chili?
It's chili.
Homemade chili?
Homemade chili.
There's a difference. Okay.
Beans
or chili?
Does it have beans?
I don't know. And the donation's $10 per person, which is awesome. $10 per person.
Thank you.
So. Friday. Good deal. Okay. Good. Gosh, sounds like an eating weekend. You can have cupcakes Wednesday night. You can have chili Friday night.
Cardiac arrest
meal
on
Saturday.
Sunday.
This is
for me.
Huh?
Sure.
You can exercise more. Okay. Anything else from council reports?
I'd rather eat less.
No. Okay. Staff reports. Finance director.
Nothing.
City administrator.
Nothing.
Planning department.
Nothing.
That's a good job. Clerks.
I do want to mention the virus really quick, because I think that's important. 2 weeks ago, I got an email from a payroll company that was addressed to myself and two of my former deputy clerks who did payroll. And so I got tricked into clicking that email, and I'm really embarrassed because I'm usually the guy at City Hall who tells other people not to click stupid emails. It was very, very well cloaked. It looked like a PDF document. It did not look like a file that would execute. And I should have thought about that. I was opening it because I needed to know if I needed to send it to the new department that does payroll all on its own, finance. That used to be a shared position where my deputy clerk did payroll. So that's what happened. Basically, it's a scary, scary virus, and I'm very glad and thankful that nobody lost anything. But what it is called is CryptoLocker, and it is known as ransomware. And what it did was it started encrypting every single file on my computer, and because I was hooked up to all of the network drives, everyone else's stuff got encrypted as well. And it then popped up a thing on my computer screen saying, we've locked out all your stuff. If you want it back, you have 66 hours and 10 seconds and 9 seconds of countdown. Pay us $350 and we'll unlock your stuff. It is very popular right now. Municipalities across the nation have been hit by it and have actually paid the ransom to get their stuff back. They're not always getting their stuff back. They're paying it, and they're not getting the key like they're supposed to. So it's a big deal. There's another one out there that's even worse called Crypto Defender. It's several names, but it's really big. And the way we got around it basically was we do very rigorous backup of our server drives and network drives and even my computer. And so we were out of commission for about 48 hours, though. And even on Friday, we didn't even issue permits at the building department because while we didn't necessarily impact that software, we were scared that I had impacted that software. So it is a big deal, and I feel really, really dumb because, like I said, I am usually the guy telling everybody else not to be dumb. So
will it send it to your contact list? So it, should we be watching for it in our email?
It won't email anything, no. Okay. So it was a Trojan that then downloaded that program.
Okay.
Good lesson learned, though. Watch what you open up on your personal email.
Yeah.
Okay, any other reports from the clerk's office?
We do have insurance that covers us from that stuff. That's the only other thing I'll mention. A $1 million.
You're still at fault.
I'm still at fault.
Clerk,
yeah. That's
clerks? That's a lot of clerk salary.
With one more thing?
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
No.
The Ferndale Public Market opens Saturday, April the 19th. That's before our next council meeting. So.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
Everybody be there.
Yes.
Thanks. Police Department.
How's the new doors?
Entertain a motion to adjourn.
So moved.
Move a second. All in favor, signify by saying aye.
Aye.
OKR adjourns.